Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. If you'd like to find me for some other outside things, go to ConnieWillis.com. That's where you can find me. I've got a free Bigfoot documentary going on over there. Give you a nice little change of pace. It was something that we did for the day, and it was really amazing. So it was fun. It was fun for sure. So check that out. And I got an eating show coming up. I've got a lottery winning show coming up. That's my Win Any Lottery, where you use a pendulum to pick the numbers, as well as a virtual bar. And of course, Blue Rock Talk, taking you to creepy hotspots, Far Out Thursday, Bigfoot Friday. Go to ConnieWillis.com and just sign up. Just sign up for the newsletter or the documentary, and then you'll learn more about what's all going on. If you'd like, I'd love for you to join me. So ConnieWillis.com, and I appreciate it. So Stanley Swan is our guest tonight. He was a part of the search and recovery team of the Twin Towers, looking through the remains on Staten Island there right after 9/11. Stanley, you had mentioned something. You said, we'll get to that later. And I think the word was, you'll have to help me. Sounds like, starts with a D.
Was it part of some of what we had found?
I think so. I think you said, we'll get to that later. And I thought, he must have a lot to say there or something.
I'm going to have to slap myself to try to remember now.
It was 20 years ago. We'll give you that.
There was one really great moment that we had when we first arrived there, before we started all the work, actually. We were on the Staten Island Ferry, and there was a lady that a young mother came up with two young boys, probably about age 5, age 7, and they were clinging pretty tightly to their mom, looking a little bit intimidated by 5 or 6 guys dressed in black, you know. And the mother was wearing a flaring skirt and a blouse and an American flag draped around her shoulder. And she and her sons walked straight up to us where we were walking and suddenly stopped. And she said, my sons wanted to say thank you to you heroes who've come to help us. I was kind of taken aback by that, quite frankly, but both her boys looked up at us and were smiling and clutching their mother's hands for assurance. And so I just knelt down on one knee and looked at the boys and said, we're not really heroes. You guys are heroes. You're the heroes because you stayed. This is your home. You didn't run away. We just came down to see if we could help you out for a few days. And they turned and walked away, and the mother turned back and said, good luck and Godspeed. And it was just a nice thing that people came to talk to us and welcome us there.
Yeah, I would imagine that I can look at that a couple different ways, not that particular situation, but that was really nice. I can understand how that would take you back. But, you know, you had said earlier, you said they had to be careful of people wanting to watch and see it from far. I could imagine with all that debris, it would be nice to have tons of volunteers. But then again, going through that, you know, these are personal belongings. These are going to be wedding rings and bands. And
exactly.
Yeah, you had to be careful of all that. They needed to get back to the right people.
The site of the Two Towers was the biggest crime scene ever in this country, because it was a crime. It was murder. And you have to treat it as a crime scene, and it was treated as such. And the same way, after everything was taken over on barges to Staten Island, it had to be treated as a crime scene, and it was very restricted on who could get into the area to work. And everything that was found had to be logged and photographed, and where it was found, what it was next to, et cetera, et cetera. Because the important thing was try to get some of these things back to the family.
Yeah.
And the sad part about the whole deal is that there's so many people who lost family members in the towers who never got anything back. Mm. I mean, Connie never got anything back. Mm. No partial remains, no jewelry, nothing. It's like these people, many people were just like evaporated, but the fires were so intense inside of that rubble pile in the pit where the towers collapsed One fellow told me he had estimated 12 to 15 to 1800 degrees. Some of these fires were burning for days. And those temperatures are similar to what you find in a regular crematory.
I was going to ask you about that. What is the temperature for a crematory?
About 1800 degrees at about 3 hours, depending on body weight. About 1800. And so a lot of the people, unfortunately, were lost. And it's sad that families were not able to get anything back. That's just a difficult thing for a family to deal with. You go to work, someone goes to work, and all of a sudden they're killed at work, and then you can't get anything back. You want to have a funeral, you want to have a memorial service, and you want something of them to be there, you know. But things have changed. The funeral business changes steadily as we speak, and more people are doing just memorial services now without a body present. But in those circumstances of death coming so quickly to people who've just gone to work for the day, it's hard for families to acknowledge that and to live with it, because it goes on and on and on. People deal with that forever. And I know for a fact that many, many hundreds of people are seeking psychological help and mental health with this thing that happened 20 years ago. They're still dealing with it.
Yeah, I was seeing some of that with the fire, some of the firemen that were watching it just from the TV alone, from different areas even, just people not even in the state. We're going to take some phone calls, Stanley. Is that okay with you?
Oh, sure.
Okay, let's go to wildcard line number one, Mitch out of Boulder. How are you, Mitch? Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi there. I didn't hear the first part, half hour of the show, but have you done any forensic investigations? And if so, have you done any investigations of the soil, air, and or water in that area?
Now, are you talking about the footprint where the towers were, or the landfill at?
Well, either or, and around the area of the Twin Towers.
I'm not in forensics, so I can't speak to that. I know that there are other agencies that have continually looked at sampling, both of those areas. Both at the footprints before the new memorial was built in Manhattan, and also at the landfill at Freshkills, because the Freshkills was totally closed a few years ago and is a memorial park now. But I can't speak to what's going on there currently, because I'm not in the forensics department.
Thanks, Mitch. Let's go to wildcard line two. It's our buddy Cornelius out of Louisiana. Cornelius, how are you doing?
Oh, honey, I'm doing all right, and you got that great Gina. I tell you, you got both the best women of Coast to Coast on. And I was, Big Blue won today in Kentucky. They beat Missouri today by 7 points, 35-28. So Big Blue won. I heard you mention Big Blue last night.
I did. I did to a Louisvillian. Yeah. Well, have you met? Oh, sorry. Sorry.
No.
Have you met Stanley Swan?
Go ahead.
No, okay. Have you met Stanley Swan yet? Stanley Cornelius.
Yes, Mr. Swan, how you doing there? My dad was a funeral home director and stuff, and he got his license from Cincinnati University of embalming and everything. And we had a funeral home business up there, the Cunningham Funeral Home in Lexington, Kentucky. And he was a Korean War vet and everything.
How long did he practice?
He practiced more than 70 years. He died in December 2020 of COVID-19. That's what took him out.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but he's in a better place. Both my mom and dad have passed. And I want to say something to you, Connie. Y'all are my family now, Coast to Coast. And like I said, it's been nice to meet you, Connie and Gina. And of course, George and Tommy knew me because I met them at an Oswald conference down here in New Orleans, Louisiana. And please keep trying to help us down here. I'd have tore us up pretty bad and stuff. And I know it headed up to New York. I hadn't heard Joe from the Bronx, but I heard Joe from Long Island, so I hope Joe from the Bronx is doing all right. But my question for you, Mr. Swan, since you said you're not in forensics or anything, but I noticed you said you picked up a piece of the plane part, and that kind of really disturbed you and stuff. They did identify a black woman today or yesterday, or they found out who she did, I guess, through forensics. And I wanted to mention one more thing, too. Connie, there's a Women of 9/11, and people need to watch that. There's a black lady that was a lieutenant colonel in the Pentagon, and she just barely escaped. Her name is Lieutenant Colonel Willis. She retired as a full bird colonel, and she's an African-American from Monroe, Louisiana, and graduated from Grambling State University. That is an excellent documentary on the women of 9/11 and stuff. But like I said, I just wanted to know, did you find anything else other than the plain part? God bless you, Connie Willis. We love Coast to Coast.
All right. Thanks, Cornelius. I appreciate that. I do know the documentary you're talking about. I did see that as well today. So, Stan, I'll go ahead and let you answer that.
Yes, Cornelius. I did find a lot of personal items, jewelry, clothing, personal items, purses, wallets, eyeglasses, and several other aircraft parts as well, parts of aircraft that we could identify as aircraft. And I want to say to you, Cornelius, I want to thank you and your father. You should be very proud of the years he spent in funeral service, and think of all the families that he helped and touched, and you can be very proud of that.
Yeah, that's Cornelius is an amazing guy, and sorry that happened to him just recently with his dad.
Yeah.
All that time, and then that happened.
It's hard to lose a parent. It's hard to lose anyone in the family, and it's hard to lose a parent.
And you dealt with that all the time, and I don't, you know, here's the deal with that. I mean, it's all going to happen to us. It's going to happen to every one of us.
Yep.
And even though that's the way it is, we're still not used to it.
No, none of us know our time when we're going to be called home. So you have to be prepared for that every day. And I think things like what we experienced at 9/11 may bring more people to realize how fragile life is every day, every hour. I mean, I'm 20 minutes from home now, and when I leave these studios tonight in Bath, New York, I'm at WVIN. I wanted to thank Dave Taylor Smith and Ray Ross for using their studio tonight. I mean, I'm 20 minutes from my home tonight to get this landline, and I could be out tonight and not make it home. So you have to be prepared for those things that could happen to you every day.
Yep. Interestingly enough, on another note, I'm in a closet doing the show, and you're in an actual radio station.
Yeah,
a little vice versa there. Interesting how that happens. So we have a ton of people on the phone, so I want to see if I can, do I have enough time for another call? Yeah, let's try that. Brian, wildcard line number one out of Washington State. How are you? Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello, Connie. Hi, Stanley.
Hi, Brian.
God bless all the people that lost their lives that day,
yes.
And God bless all the people that did all the work they did, including yourself. I had a question. You guys were talking a little bit earlier about the temperatures of the pile. The base of the pile the Twin Towers. And you did mention that you did find that one airplane part on the conveyor belt. And I always thought, I was curious, so that would really debunk the people that didn't think they were aircraft. And I always thought, like the fan blades on the 767-200 Boeing planes on the North and the South Tower. And the fan blades, that titanium fan blades on the turbo fan engines, the melting point is like 3,000 degrees. So I couldn't imagine the stuff that you guys had to go through. I was just curious that some of the fan blades didn't turn up.
Yeah, there were many, 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 and I can't count them, but actual windows from the aircraft that we found that were in a pile that had been discovered, not by myself, but by other people who were searching, that were windows that people were probably looking out that day when they flew into the towers. And I saw probably 12 or 13 of those aircraft windows there, plus many other parts of the fuselage, which we could identify because of the riveting and the color coding. And we were all given a quick training on that before we did some of the searches. They wanted us to know what these aircraft parts look like if we would come across them. And we did find many, many aircraft parts. So the theory is that there were maybe no aircraft involved or whatever, but yeah, they were there. And you saw them go into the buildings, and we saw the result, and we could actually feel those parts at the bottom of the pile. So it was a breathtaking experience to be there.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I was there a few weeks before it happened. I was actually living in Orlando at the time and flying back and forth. I was working with Oxygen Network and doing Oxygen Sports, anchoring for a new show that they were pulling out, this new big great event of Oxygen Sports, and all this great stuff was happening and flying back and forth. It was really cool. And then during that time, at one point, I flew up there, and my boyfriend at the time and his family, we went up onto the tower. So I got to go to the top of the tower before anything ever happened to it, I'm glad that happened. Their brother was going to be on Broadway doing the full Monty and all that stuff. So it was a really big deal. But the interesting thing was when I went into, before we got our picture taken, because you get your picture taken before you go up to the top. And before that happened, I was trying to find a bathroom and I couldn't find one. And I kept being directed somewhere else. I ended up being in the basement area where there's like a mall. And I ended up going to both towers. It was really weird. I couldn't find, I was like in the zone, some sort of weird twilighty zone kind of thing. And I just thought, something's wrong. Something's wrong. This is not right. And then when we got the picture later too, it looked like it was history. Yeah. So anyway, more to come here. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here with Stanley Swan. More to come. Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis here. Check me out at ConnieWillis.com. And enjoy the rest of the evening here on Coast to Coast. Of course, we are talking 9/11. We're going to be having open lines later, and we want to know, where were you when it happened? Where were you when it happened, 9/11? We also are taking questions now, along with Stanley Swan, who was there for the search and recovery for 12 days there at the Twin Towers, remains telling us all about how that went. Is there another, Stanley, we have a ton of people that want to talk to you, so that's good. And I definitely want to hit them for sure. But is there anything else you definitely want to say before we do attack some more of the phone calls?
No, I've got some things we can talk about in a bit, but yeah, I'd love to hear what other people are interested in hearing about.
There's no later in a bit. You got to talk now. No, I wanted to ask you something about what did you find anything that surprised you at all, that surprised you the most, that you were like, this makes no sense, or wow, or anything that sticks out? And maybe it's just emotional. I would think. Me, if I found driver's license,
yeah,
that would just, that would tear me up.
Yeah, and a lot of the personals that we found, some had light charring, like they'd been through some light fire or scorching, you know, from somewhere. But most everything that we did find, a lot of it had crush injuries, because naturally, when the towers went down, the people that were in there were basically crushed. So that's what we found on a lot of the items that we finally did recover. The personal items were hard to retrieve, you know, because a necklace that had been ripped off some lady, gentleman's watch with a gold watch with a broken face cover and maybe half of the band missing, but again showed signs of you know of being crushed or ripped violently. So and that was what a lot of the remains that we found were. So it was just the nature of the whole tragedy that happened that day.
Going back to the phones, David, first-time caller out of Orlando, Florida. David, welcome to Coast. Do you have a question for Stanley?
Hello, Connie. Nice to
hey
talk
there.
To you.
You too.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello. Yep. Hey there.
Hey, Connie. Nice to talk to you. You know, you're a dead ringer for, I think you've got a twin sister here in Orlando on the radio, actually on 5:40 a.m. that I'm listening to this show. You guys sound like twin sisters, believe it or not.
Oh, she must be pretty cool.
She is. She is. And, good evening, Stanley. Nice to talk to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Same to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you a quick question because I had a friend that I worked with probably about 7 or 8 years ago now, and we got to talking. He was from New York, and he told me he was in New York on 9/11. And he happened to be working at that time when 9/11 happened. He was working on the largest tugboat that was in New York City at the time. He said that they got contracted by the government, FAA or FEMA or whoever, to carry debris from Manhattan across the water, I guess, to probably Staten Island, where you were working at the time. And He was an experienced welder, so he knew steel and stuff like that. And he told me that he saw very strange steel structure. And I know a lot of people have different thoughts about what really happened. And, you know, it's on both sides of the coin, I guess, whether people knew it was coming or you know, terrorists or whatever. But My question is, did you happen to see anything that kind of stuck out about any of the I-beams or anything that you saw in the debris that looked like maybe, you know, it was out of place? You know, like how could a building fall and an I-beam have such a precise, clean cut, you know, or a smooth edge like something had been, you know, cut with like a plasma torch or something like that?
I understand your question. I didn't spend any time at Ground Zero other than that first night, so we didn't get to look at any of that major superstructure, the I-beams, the internal construction of the towers. But everything that I saw that was brought over to Staten Island, I didn't see anything out of the ordinary that looked odd or unusual to me. It all looked like, yeah, this had come down in a building. And I didn't see anything that looked out of the ordinary. The fire trucks that were brought over that had been partially crushed or burned, they all looked normal except for their physical injuries to their vehicle. The things that came out of the towers that we looked at, desks, everything from computers to telephones to wiring to light harnesses, they all just looked like they were in a major calamity. But no, I didn't see anything that struck me as different or unusual.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people are going to probably be asking you, and I'm trying not to get into the conspiracy side. I'm trying to be more about commemorative to the people and the families. But one question I know that a lot of people want me to ask you is, excuse me, sorry, is did you notice in the debris, and even would you, and maybe you don't even know, would you notice if there were some sort of bomb set off? Because a lot of people believe there was bombs that just went all the way down as the buildings fell. Did you see anything like that with what you saw? And would you have even recognized anything if that were the case?
I didn't see anything like that. Even on the aircraft parts that I did see, they all looked, I didn't see anything that looked out of the ordinary other than they had actually been ripped apart. But again, I'm not a forensic person in demolition, so that's something that the FBI would have looked at a lot of those things, and the FBI was on Staten Island along with all these other agencies. They had a full force of people there looking at the things we were going through, and I'm sure if they found those things, they would have noted it accordingly.
Yeah, and I thought he was, when he was talking about hearing someone in Orlando, I used to be in Orlando radio, so I didn't know if he, you know, felt like kind of yesterday, so I was kind of thinking maybe
around,
he
girl.
Knew me. It was like in the 90s, so I'm thinking, is he joking, or does he think of me from a long time ago, or maybe there's somebody there, or maybe there's some old commercials running still. That happens, too. West of the Rockies, Danny, out of Las Vegas. Hey there, Danny. Welcome to Coast AM.
Oh, thank you, Connie. As Ed Sullivan would say, great shoe.
Oh, there you go.
I just wanted to state, are we allowed to mention the when and where yet, or is it a separate? Can
oh no, just, you can go ahead. You know what? I was going to do that later, but no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I didn't want to preempt.
I don't want to hang up on you.
No, I don't want that. Okay. Yeah, where I was at, I was living in Citrus Heights, California, and I was getting ready for work. And of all the times for me not to have had the radio on, I mean, I was just, it was 3 o'clock. I was waiting for my father to pick me up to take me to work. And it's amazing. And then, and I just have a question for Mr. Swan, you know, followed with this statement, you know,
okay.
That I make. And that is, I was getting ready. I was in the bath, and I was combing my hair. And, you know, I'm a really big fan of, I don't know if you've heard this gospel music artist. He's the cousin of Jerry Lee Lewis, but Jimmy Swaggart. And there's a verse, one of the songs that he sung, which was entitled God Take One My Yesterday. But the verse goes, I can't live for tomorrow, for tomorrow may never come. And it's so weird, Miss Lewis, because I got emotional, started crying a little bit, didn't even know what it was all about. And then I just kind of stomped and started, and my father picked me up, and that's when he told me the news. And then it all made sense. And then I just have a question for you, Mr. Swan, out of respect for people behind me waiting very patiently to talk to you folks. have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of John O'Neill? There was a book written about him that was entitled, I'd highly advise it for you if you'd like to read it, or even the video that Frontline made was entitled The Man Who Knew and The Man Who Warned America. He was the FBI agent. He was in one of the towers as head of security, basically to make extra money, because as an FBI agent, the lifestyle that he lived, he had to pay off some bills, if you would. And so have you ever heard of him?
I have heard the name, Danny. John O'Neill, but I'm not familiar with him. But if you said he wrote a book, I certainly will look for it.
Yeah, that's let us know about that one. I heard a little bit about that one today in one of the documentaries. Watched every one that I could see today. Must have decided to get some water at the time because I missed a little bit of that. But I definitely got some of that story too. Thank you, Danny. I appreciate that. Yeah, we got a lot of people on the line that want to talk to you. So you know what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to ask if you can stick around as well with us.
I'd be humbled to stay if you would like to have me stay a bit, sure.
All right. How about WVIN? Are they okay with you sticking around longer?
Well,
are you going to lock the doors later?
The
I know it. How cool is that?
I opened and closed tonight. And I had to notify the local police and let them know that if they saw anything going on, it's just Stanley doing a broadcast from there.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. That's amazing. So, okay, we're going to try to take one more quick phone call before we go into the next break. Jeff, wildcard line two, Jeff, out of Chelsea, Massachusetts. Hey there, Jeff. How are you? Welcome to Coast.
I'm doing just fine. I'd like to ask the guest. Does he think another 9/11 is coming? This is in light of what Trump said on One American News Network and the explosives that the Taliban has gotten in Afghanistan from Biden's debacle and the Afghans are bringing into this country.
Well, there you go.
I was very nervous today. I was very nervous all week because following the story in Afghanistan and everything else going in our troubled world to now, more than ever before, I kind of had the inkling that it's very possible that we are indeed going to get hit again. I pray to God it doesn't happen. But I know for a fact that everything was on super alert today over the city of New York. And everybody was out in full force in the air and on the ground just in case. But there was no inkling of anything that I read in the last 48 hours that said there was anything imminent. So let's hope that that stays the case. But I think a lot of people are nervous right now that that could happen again, and I pray that it does not.
Did you know that, you know, doing what you did at that time, did you know how significant that was going to be for the rest of your life with the recovery and search?
Not actually, because as a funeral director, I can't say it was just another day at work, because it certainly wasn't. But I've had a lot of trauma death that I've taken care of in the 30 years I was in the funeral business, but nothing like the trauma that we found there that happened with two airplanes going into two buildings. But it was a massive amount of work, and it was just a mental thing. And I told other people who had not had experience in working with the remains before that it's a job. Just you can't get emotionally involved with it at the time. You think about it after you get done, but at the time you're doing the work, you just have to do the work and keep focused.
Yeah, easy for you with your background for so many years, for sure. You know, I'm going to tout that one for sure. But, you know, let's say you're able to do that. You are able to do that. You put your emotion later. So what happens when you go home? The wife and kids, are they like, how's that when you take it home?
I know a lot of older funeral directors who are alcoholics. I'm not one of those, or I never did a lot of drugs. No drugs, a little alcohol. But it's just a matter of you have to take that energy and put it into your hobbies, whatever you do. You just have to have an outgoing of that energy and that pent-up stuff that you have in your head. So riding a bike, whatever you do for hobbies, you know, you run it off like anything else.
Well, I understand that as the undertaker, but what about when you, with the 9/11, that just had to take the cake? I mean, at that point, that just would be too much, I would think. Was it a little different for you?
It was. Even being in the business, it was difficult to fathom what was going on in front of you at the time. Just standing at the foot of those towers that first night we were there, looking at that scene, you thought, like, this is not real. I'm not here. This is not happening. Because your mind is not accustomed to seeing something that massive. So you automatically, your mind tries to adjust your personality, saying, okay, it's not really real, but, you know, you just have to deal with it. So, yeah, it was huge.
How did, when you first got selected and, you know, you got that phone call, how did you have any prep time, or was it just instant and you were just,
you know, actually,
there you are?
We had about 10, 12 days of prep time before we were actually called to go down.
Oh.
The sheriff was put on call by either Sheriff's Association or other high-ups in the state and said, get a team together of 5 or 6 guys or girls or whatever, and we'll tell you when to head down. And so we went out and bought equipment that we thought we needed. We bought raincoats, we bought rain boots, we bought other kinds of gear, because we didn't really know what we were going to do there. We thought we were going for probably just to do security around the perimeter.
Oh.
We know that we'd actually be going down, you know, sorting through remains. That was kind of taken back by that. But
oh, absolutely. They throw it at you at the end there. That way they got you. And whew, that's tough. Wow. Stanley Swan, that's who we're talking to. I'm Connie Willis, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.